Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to our next shiur in our series of shiur about kashrus, kashrus concepts. Tonight we are starting a new topic, and that is tefilas kelim. Last few topics we've been able to go through in one shiur. I don't know if we'll be able to do that with tefilas kelim, but at least let's get started. So as I mentioned a couple seconds ago, in order to understand the topic of Tefilas Kelim a little better, and we'll see it's not just Tefilas Kelim, but it will also be the next topic, Kemiras Hashem, of Hekshar Kelim, about kashering a vessel that maybe for whatever reason became treif. We have to, in order to understand both of those, go back to the source, and the source is obviously the Torah. So if you look in your Chumash, it's on page 906. Parshas Matos, Perek Lamed Aleph. We'll start with Pasuk Chof Aleph. Page 906 again. Parshas Matos and Bamidbar. Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chof Aleph. Now, just to catch everybody up on the storyline, we all unfortunately remember the story about the incident of Baal Peor, where through the advice of Bilam, when Bilam was unsuccessful, cursing Klal Yisrael, and Baruch Hashem, Hashem watched over us and turned all of his curses around to brachos. So Chazal tell us that Bilam gave a different idea, another way to destroy Klal Yisrael, and that is through intermarriage, through socializing between Jews and non-Jews, which is basically the topic which we've discussed in the last couple of shiurim about various takanas which were instituted to make sure that we have a distance and we don't come, even when the relationships between Jews and non-Jews is okay, but still we have to make sure that there is a certain distance. We see this unfortunately very graphically in America, where those boundaries are broken down. And then we see what the result is. So unfortunately, there's a terrible plague amongst Klal Yisrael, and therefore Hashem commands Klal Yisrael to go to war, to take revenge against Midian, and they do. They go to war. Now there's subplots in here, obviously, if you want to use that terminology. Here in California, we will. Now, what happens is that Moshe Rabbeinu comes, meets the army coming back victorious, and he has a claim against them because they left alive some of the women who were the source of the problem. So Chazal say that because Moshe Rabbeinu became angry, the next narrative that we have will not be said over through Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather through Elazar Cohen. In other words, that Aaron Cohen is not alive anymore at this point. His place was taken by his son Elazar, and Elazar is going to say the following halachas over to the army. And again, we have an army which has been victorious in war against non-Jews, and they're coming back to the camp. Obviously, some of the things that they have are spoils from the war. Some of those spoils of the war could obviously be food utensils. Food utensils. There could be barbecues. There could be sandwich makers. There could be microwave ovens. There's all those type of things that they were bringing back. Now, so that's where we pick up the story. So in Pasuk Chof Aleph, the Torah says, "Vayomer Elazar Cohen al Anshei HaTzava Habayim LaMelchama." So Elazar Cohen said to the army, who was coming back from war. Now again, as I said before, the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu is not saying this halacha, Chazal tell us, is because again he got angry. So therefore, so to speak, as a punishment, the halacha was said over by Elazar. Zoschu Kasa Torah Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. This is the chok. Now what a chok means? So irrefutable law, which Hashem commanded Moshe. Very interesting psukim. Now let's watch these psukim very carefully. aches azahaves akasef, only gold and silver, as anachoshes ves arbarzel, the copper and the iron, as abdil ves alfaras, and the lead and the tin and the lead. Now, just think very quickly what the common denominator is between those things which we just mentioned. Gold, silver, bronze, copper, tin, lead. So those materials, kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, anything which goes into fire, taviru ba'esh, you should pass through fire, v'taher, and it should become tahor, purified. Ach b'mei nida yitzchata, however, it has to be brought to mei nida is the paraduma water. V'chol asher lo yavo ba'esh, and anything that's not brought to by fire, taviru mayim, you bring it through water. Okay, let's stop there. Before the last pasuk talks about clothing, you have to wash the clothing in a mikvah. But now, again, as I said all the way at the beginning, take any pasuk that you have in the Torah and you read it literally. Now, for example, we brought some examples all the way at the beginning, tefillin, mezuzah, but these are great examples. So we said gold, silver, tin, bronze, iron, lead. Anything that's brought through fire should be brought through fire. What does that mean? V'taher, and it will become tahor. Ach b'mei nida yischata, but you have to also sprinkle the paraduma on it, the water of the paraduma, and anything that doesn't come into fire should be brought through water. What's going on here? What do these psukim mean? Now, to make things a little more complicated, even if you were to figure out what these psukim mean, there's one little problem. There's many problems, but one problem that we'll focus on tonight, and that is v'taher, the middle word of that pasuk. Anything that's brought into fire should be brought through fire, v'taher. And it's made tahor. Do you ever hear such a thing? Do you ever hear that fire would make something tahor? Mikvah maybe does. Paraduma maybe does. In certain cases, a spring of water, like by Metzora, will make somebody tahor or something tahor. But where do you see that fire makes something tahor? So even if you're going to understand this pasuk somehow, the word v'taher is out of place and inexplicable. So what do we do with these psukim? Obviously, we need Chazal to explain it, right? As Rav says, these are just the notes. We need the shir. Here comes the shir for the next 2-3 days, you know. Chazal say that, as I mentioned before, that Elazar was telling over a halacha about food utensils. Now again, amongst the many things that were brought back is food utensils, forks, knives, bowls, all sorts of things. So now there's three potential problems with those forks, knives, other things that were brought back from Midian. The first problem is they're not kosher. They're not kosher. So we'll talk about that in Emirat Hashem in the next topic. So the question is, how do we make a food utensil which was used for pork or something that wasn't kosher, how do we make it now usable in a kosher home? That's one problem. Now, we'll get to it in Meretz Hashem in the next topic, Nether, but that is the idea of fire. Anything that is brought through fire shall be brought through fire. Anything that's brought through water is brought through water. And in Meretz Hashem will discuss how Chazal understand those psukim and make them understandable. So that's the first problem. The first problem is that we have a utensil, it's not kosher. So how do you make it kosher? So here in these psukim, Elazar is telling how Hashem tells us to make a vessel kosher. That's the first problem. There's another problem. It might be tamei tumas meis. It might be tamei because it came into contact with a dead body. So how do we take care of that problem? Okay, that's a little simpler, or I don't know, simpler, but at least, and that is, you use the paraduma. So the Torah addresses that. Mei nido yischata, you have to use the mei nido, which is paraduma water, and it makes it tahor. But there's still one problem. What's the word vitaher? It's one word stuck in the middle. Vitaher. Now, it's not talking about paraduma, because the Torah already talks about the paraduma issue. Right afterwards, the Torah says, v'taher, ach b'mei nida yischata. You have to use paraduma water. Right? So then the question is, what's the v'taher? So believe it or not, from that one word, I'm sure you will believe me, hopefully, from that one word, v'taher, we learn out that there's a third issue. And that is, even if the vessel is kosher, even if you took care of the paraduma issue. For example, us. I don't know if you call it taking care of the paraduma issue, but unfortunately, tumas meis is and is not an issue for us because we can't do anything about it until Mashiach comes. We have paraduma, and Eliyahu does paraduma and sprinkles it on all of us, then we'll become tahor through the paraduma. But right now, unfortunately, that's not an issue. It is, but it's not. There's nothing we can do about it. So the Torah says v'taher, that you have to make your vessel tahor. So from that, Chazal learned that there's a third issue. And that is, even if you have a vessel that, let's say, is not a problem of kashrus, and let's say it's not a problem of paraduma. I'll give you a very simple example. You go to Costco or wherever you want, and you buy flatware. You buy forks and knives. So it's not a problem of kashrus, hopefully, because they're brand new. So there's no issue of kashrus. There's no issue of paraduma, unfortunately, because there's nothing we can do about it. So now there's a third issue, and that third issue is v'taher. And that is a beautiful, incredible idea. And that is that our forks, our knives, our pots have to be lifted up to a level of kedusha. Lifted up to a level of kedusha. That if you have a vessel that belonged to a goy, and we'll talk about that later, what does that mean, belong to a goy, and now it belongs to a Jew, so even leaving aside the kashrus issue, and even leaving aside the paraduma issue, you have another issue. And the other issue is, now it's in the possession of a Jew, it's going to be used in a Jewish home. So any food has to be elevated to a higher level, to Kedushas Yisrael. It has to be on a level of Kedusha. This is like, I'm sure if you mention this to someone who's not frum, or someone who's not Jewish, it's a shocking idea that we even have food that has to be on a level of Kedusha. And therefore, the pot and the fork and the knife that's used with that food has to be on a level of Kedusha. So how do we raise it up to a level of Kedusha, of holiness, of sanctity? You have to take it to a mikveh before. You have to take that fork, knife, pot, whatever it will, we'll discuss a little later, what exactly has to be totaled. But it has to be raised up to a level of Kedusha, and therefore we have a separate halacha v'taher, that this fork, knife, pot, whatever it may be, has to be brought to a mikveh before it's used. So that any subsequent food that is made through those utensils or used in conjunction with those utensils are on a definite level. Now we know that, I've discussed this many times, the Chofetz Chaim says in the Be'er HaLocha that a person, when they eat the food, their act of eating could be a mitzvah, not only a mitzvah, but could be raised up to a level of Kedusha. The Chofetz Chaim says this all the way at the beginning of the Be'er HaLocha, at the beginning of Mishnah Berurah, that if a person eats and their kavana, their intent is so that I could serve Hashem better, because it's hard not to eat. And of course, it also depends on what we eat. And food nourishes not only the body, but also the soul. And therefore, when we eat, if we have that intent, so then the food is raised up to a level of Kedusha. That's one of the ideas of making a bracha. Besides asking Hashem permission to eat his food, but also to make an awareness that when we eat, we're not just eating like an animal. You can eat like an animal, or you can eat like a Jew. And when you eat, whatever you may eat could be raised up to a level of Kedusha. Therefore, we have to, before we even use a vessel which is used for food, we have to take it to a mikveh. Everybody here in the shul is familiar with that, since we have one in the backyard. And that's a incredible concept if you think about it. Now is not the time to think about it, but because it's a halacha shir. Now, what Chazal also, which some of you might be wondering, what Chazal learned out is not only from that word v'tahir do we learn the mitzvah of tefilas kelim, that we have to tovel, we have to immerse all of our vessels, not all, but most of our vessels. Actually, today, I don't even know if that's true. But Chazal learned out, not only do we learn out from the word v'tahir that we have to immerse our vessels, but we learn out something else. And that is, and some of you might have had that question, why is that mitzvah of tefilas kelim brought in right in the middle of the psukim, which talk about hechsher kelim? Hechsher kelim, again, is the next topic, and that is that, again, as there might be a vessel that you got from a non-Jew, maybe it was used by Mr. Midyan, Mr. and Mrs. Midyan. They're not alive anymore. But now they, Mr. and Mrs. Midyan, used it for their Super Bowl party and all those sorts of things that they, verbase, that they did. So that vessel is treif. Now we have to make it kosher. So Torah explains to us right there how to do that. And under what circumstances, and incredible. But all of a sudden, stuck in the middle there, we have the word v'tahir, which, as I said before, teaches us the mitzvah of tefilas kelim. So the question is, why is it that the source of tefilas kelim is interwoven in the same psukim, or the same pasuk, as hechsher kelim? Why is it that immersing a vessel before we use it is put right there, juxtaposed, right there with koshering something? So the answer is that, again, this is only a Torah Shabbat Peh way of doing things, that we learn out things from the fact that Tefilas Kelim and Hechsher Kelim are together in the same sukkim. And we'll get into those in a second. But I do want to mention that most poskim, we'll see again about it later, from the word v'tahir, as I mentioned before, we learn that there's a mitzvah tefilas kelim. You have to realize, according to most poskim, under certain circumstances, tefilas kelim, even today, is a mitzvah from the Torah. Remember, I think at the end of the last year we were discussing, you always have to bear in mind, what are we talking about? Are we talking about a mitzvah from the Torah? Are we talking about a mitzvah that's rabbinical, midrabanan? Are we talking about minog? Now, obviously, all those three levels are very important to us. But there's a difference. There's a difference. If there's a doubt, if there's an argument in halacha, various differences. But again, there is a difference whether something is midoraisa, derabanan, or minog. Now, in certain circumstances, for example, by metal utensils, and under a couple more circumstances, to tovel something that's metal is a mitzvah from the Torah. So you have to bear that in mind as we go through. Okay, good. So what are some of the things that we learn out from the juxtaposition of tefilas kelim and hechsher kelim? So you, again, as I pointed out before, the Torah first, Elazar first enumerates metal objects. That's probably what you noticed. When we start rattling off all those various materials, talk about gold, silver, copper, tin, lead, iron. What's the common denominator in all those utensils? They're metals. They're metallic, as we call them. Right? They're all metals. So one of the things that we learn out is the same things that we will be able, we'll talk about it, Mirza Shem, in the next topic, the same things that you can kosher, if they became trey, if you can make them kosher, those same things you have to tovel. Meaning the Torah, Allah rattles off all these metals. So we'll talk about this later. Things that are metal, you could kasher. Things that are metal, you have to tovel. So as I just mentioned before, when we're talking about something that's made out of metal, under many circumstances, let's say a fork, a knife, something like that, to tovel that fork and the knife is a mitzvah from the Torah. That's one of the things we learn. The same way you could kasher it, so too it has to be v'taher. It has to be toveled. Okay. Let's say something that's not metal. All the many materials that we have that are not metal. Let's say wood, paper, plastic. Well, plastic's a machlokus, but many poskim say plastic doesn't have to be tovel. But let's say wood, things like that. Do those have to be tovel? No, they don't have to be tovel because they're not in that stream of metal. So now the question is, how about glass? How about glass? So the answer is glass has to be toveled, midrabanan. Now, do you remember a while back already, when we first started this shurim, we were talking about carne leche, just to translate for those who don't live in Southern California. That means milcha kumfleishik. So we were talking about milcha kumfleishik, and we were talking about things that you could have. What can't you have with milk? Answer is anything that's meat. Good. How about chicken? Let's go the other way. How about fish? Can you have fish with milk? Answer is yes. Even though some svarim have a minimum. Not that way, but let's just leave it at that. How about chicken? Can you have chicken with milk? Answer was, chicken with milk is aser midrabonim. Why? Answer is, because there's a common denominator between a cow and a chicken. And that common denominator is not there by fish. If you recall, the common denominator was shechita. If you want to eat meat, you have to sheft it. If you want to eat chicken, you have to sheft it. If you want to eat a salmon, you don't have to sheft it. Now we discuss why, where does it come from, so on and so forth. Fine. But the idea I'm trying to point out is that there's a common denominator, and therefore Chazal said, since these things have something in common, so therefore the halacha applies. In other words, can't have meat with milk. That's also from the Torah. You can't have chicken with milk. That's also midrabanan, because chicken has a common denominator with meat. So therefore they asked milk with chicken. Similar idea applies here. Chazal said, really, midoraisa, from the Torah, you don't have to tovel glass. But glass has a common denominator with metal. Metal which does have to be tovel. So since glass has a common denominator with metal, Chazal said that the glass has to be tovel midrabanan. What's the common denominator? The common denominator is they could be fixed. They could be fixed. And we know, I don't know if it's still there, but when I was a boy, so you went to a farmer's market, so they had a glass blower there. And he blew glass, and so potentially what you could do is they could heat up something glass and re-blow it or fix it. Now, again, it's a separate hashkaf idea that very few people do that. Again, when we talk about Helkshar Kahn, we'll revisit this idea that in the society, I guess, that we live in, if you break glass, you just throw it out, and you go to the 99-cent store, and you get 99 glasses for 99 cents, right? But we'll revisit this when we get to Helkshar Kahn also. Talk about, can you kasher glass? So we'll revisit this idea. But glass, like metal, could be fixed. So therefore, since they have that common denominator, so therefore glass has to be tovel midrabanan. Now when we talk about the bracha, now as you know, it really doesn't make a difference because we make brachas over mitzvahs derabanan, as you all know. So you would make a bracha under a certain circumstance for glass, just like metal. Right? We make brachas on derabanan, Purim, Chanukah, are all derabanan, you make a bracha. Right? So the same thing would apply to glass. Now, something that's ceramic, which is also a common material, does not have to be tovled. So what do we got so far? Metal definitely has to be tovled. Glass definitely has to be tovled, midrabanan. Ceramic, what we call cheres. Anything that would come under the name cheres. Cheres is ceramic, so today what do we call it? China, porcelain, enamel, any of those type of materials would be cheres. So you don't have to tovel that. Now some of you are looking at me quizzically. Your daughter's here. I couldn't see who the second head was. But they popped away very quickly. Now, some people are looking at me quizzically because you do know that people do total China. The reason is for a different reason. Really, no one's going to deny that cheres, something that's ceramic, does not have to be totaled. There's a different issue by something that's China, not the country, something the material. And that is that China is glazed. And the glaze is made of usually a glass-like material. So now the question is, that layer of glaze is glass. So now the question is, the China doesn't have to be tovel, it's cheres. But the question is that there's a glaze coating, and that glaze coating is glass. So now glass does have to be tovel. So that's the argument. So many posts, like Ramosha Feinstein, hold that the glass coating is microscopic or very insignificant. Therefore, it's null, it's batel to the dish, the main body of the dish, which is cheres. So therefore, it doesn't have to be tovel. There are posts that disagree with that. So therefore, you see different people do different things. Some people tovel their china, some people don't. Now, I do have to mention that some people like Lubavitch, they tovel everything. They tovel everything. That's their minug, and they'll tovel everything. So it makes it a little easier in halacha. But so again, so you do have to realize it could be somebody tovels china for that reason, right? But again, if you don't follow that minug, so then you have to realize that something's made out of china, and it's glazed. So then some hold it doesn't have to be tovel. Just be aware of that. Now, of course, we have tons of other materials today in our modern society which present interesting challenges. For example, Corel or Corningware, you'll have different opinions whether those have to be tovel or not. I'll just tell you very quickly, Rabbi First in Chicago, Diane Chicago told me that he checked into it, and he holds that Corel and Corningware does have to be tovled. He told me they're mostly glass, so he holds that they, but their opinion's not that way. But besides that, we have other issues also, and that is we have a lot of utensils and pots and pans which are coated. They're coated with Teflon and Silverstone and all these type of things. So again, I'm not going to get into whether they're healthy and you heat them and do they give off some dangerous thing that you have to speak to my wife about. But I'm just talking about strictly the halacha, meaning that let's say you have a pot and the pot's made out of metal, so it has to be tovled. Yeah, but it's coated with something. So what does that do? So you have to realize that some poskim say that will make it that since that's where the food comes into contact, which we'll talk about, so you don't have to tovel it. Now, Ramosha doesn't hold that way. And again, it's just a coating. So again, along the same lines as he said before, so it's batel, and therefore you go the other way. In other words, in this case, the main body of the vessel is metal. It's not like the china or the stuff we were talking about before, but rather it's mostly metal. It's just a coating because you don't want things to stick, you don't want this, you don't want that, whatever it is. But the main body is metal. So therefore, following the rationale we said before, you would have to tovel, and that's usually what most people hold, is that something that's coated, if the main body of the utensil is metal, so therefore, if it didn't have the coating, you definitely have to tovel it, so the coating doesn't make it any worse, and therefore you do have to tovel it anyways. Now, you know, we have other situation like this, like a baby spoon. A baby spoon is metal, but it's completely, right, plastic. Well, now they make them that are, they're completely plastic. But there are some that really inside they're metal, and they just are covered with plastic so the baby doesn't, you know, blow up the world with it or something like that. So again, so that would be a similar issue. That might be a little stronger, again, but you get into those same issues. Getting back to a material, aluminum, some say does not have to be tovel, some say it does, some say it's derabanan. Again, I don't want to talk about aluminum too much right now because that will really get into aluminum pans and disposable, which we'll talk about later. So I just want to leave aluminum for right now. Okay, so now the first thing that we learn out from the positioning of tefilas kelim with hechsher kelim is whatever can be koshered has to be tovel. Metals could be koshered. We see that in psukim. So therefore, they have to be tovel. How about other materials? Well, then they don't have to be tovel. Okay, we got glass, which is derabanan, for the reason we mentioned before. So that's the first connection between tefilas kelim and hechsher kelim, why they're together. That's number one. There's another reason why tefilas kelim and hechsher kelim are together. And that is, if you just think for a second, if something has to be koshered, in other words, we have a fork, let's say. Now that fork you brought back from the war in Midian. That means, as I said before, Mr. and Mrs. Midian used it. Therefore, it's treif. Therefore, it has to be koshered. But wait. Before you get that far, you said it's treif. Why is it treif? Well, simple. Because Mr. and Mrs. Midian used that fork when they ate their Farmer John bacon. Right? Now, what does that mean, they use it? That means the fork came into direct contact with the food. That's what it means. It's very hard for something to be treif if it didn't come into direct contact with the food. So this fork, knife, whatever it may be, came into direct contact with pig. Therefore, it's treif. Therefore, we have to take care of that issue. We'll discuss that in Mir Sashem, as I said before. Next topic. Now, believe it or not, that's another connection between hechsher kelim and tefilas kelim. That something that has to be koshered, by definition, means it came into direct contact with the food. Therefore, the same thing applies by tefilas kelim. The only thing you have to tovel, excuse me, the only thing you have to tovel is only something that came into direct contact with, or will come into direct contact with food. If there is something that will not come into direct contact with food, you don't have to tovel it, even if it is made out of metal. Let me give you a few examples. Let's do Pasch in the Shiloh time. People use on Shabbos, so I don't want to get into that right now, crock pots. Okay? Now, for lack of a better term, there's the pot and there's the crock, meaning there is the heating element and there's the pot that goes into it. Now, so the question is, do you have to tovel the pot? Okay, let's leave the ceramic and the glaze and all that type of aside. I don't think they make it, but let's say you had a metal pot. So would you have to tovel it? Yes. Now the question is, do you have to tovel the crock? Do you have to tovel the metal part, which has the heating elements, which the pot sits in and thereby cooks? Would you have to tovel the heating element, the heating pot part? The answer is no, because it doesn't come into direct contact with the food. Do you have to tovel, in most cases, I know some people don't do this, but in most cases, do you have to tovel grates of an oven? Answer is usually not, because people don't put, you might put a pot on it, you might put, usually put something on the grate which is not food. You don't put a steak on, you know, if you have a broiler pan, that's a different story. But the grates of an oven, would you have to tovel that? Answer is no, because it doesn't come into direct contact with the food. We could give a lot of different examples along these lines. Would you have to tovel the grates of a toaster oven? No, probably not, because let me change that. Yes, because you usually put toast onto it. Would you have to tovel the toaster oven? No, because the toaster oven doesn't come into direct contact with the food. So you get the idea. Anything that comes into direct contact with the food, you have to tovel. Something that doesn't, I'm trying to come up with some other bizarre. Water urn, you would have to tovel. Now, well, I don't want to get into that because it's electrical. I want to save that when Mirza Shem will get a little further, deeper into the topic. There's infinite. Right, the brand sandwich maker, right. Or George Foreman. Now, see, that would be a good example. I remember when Avrami went away to yeshiva, so we bought him a George Foreman. So it wasn't a George Foreman, because I found at Costco. I mean, now they're very popular, but then they weren't as common. I found a Hamilton Beach George Foreman knockoff that had plates that came out that were removable. So they said the reason why is for washing, you know, so you clean it much easily, more easily. I bought it because that way he only has to tovel those plates that come into direct contact with the food. Now, again, I'll talk about later about what do you do with a waffle maker, a sandwich maker, a George Foreman that does not have that. Does not have removable plates. So we'll get to that later. But you get the basic idea. Anything that comes into direct contact with the food would have to be tovel. I saw Mr. Cohn raising his hand, so that brought another. The coffee makers we have. So would you have to tovel, what do they call it, the cafe, right? The pitcher. Yes. Would you have to tovel the Mr. Coffee itself, where it warms up things on the bottom, let's say. And we're not getting into the filters and all that. But where the filters are on top. But no, because that does not come into direct contact with food. Okay, so that you get the basic idea. Mr. Coney had another...
Lids. I'm not sure if they come into contact with.
No, that's considered part of the kli. You'd have to total that. Yes. Very good point. No? Right. So, okay, you're going back to the material. Yeah, again, you have a machlokas with that, but most poskim say you have to tovel it. It would be a derabanan, obviously. It's not going to be better than glass, but it would be a similar thing.
What was the question?
Pyrex. Some are lenient with Pyrex, but again. Okay. Now, there's a third connection between Tfilas Kelim and Hakshar Kelim. And that is ownership of a goy. In other words, that what we also learn out is that in order for something to be tovel, it had to be, and you basically got this idea from what I mentioned before, we're raising it up to Kedushas Yisrael, so that means it was not in the possession of a Jew before. Now it is, so for a Jew to use it, it has to be tovel. Now, that's another point that we'll talk about. And that is if a goy owned it. Now, for example, let's say you went to Mei Sharim or Geula or someplace like that, and you bought a becher. You bought a becher, and you bought it from somebody, from Jew. Now, would you have to tovel it? Probably not. I'm a little shaky on that because. But let's put it this way. If you know that if he manufactured it, now it doesn't mean he actually did it. It could be he actually did. But in other words, it's his company and it's a Jewish man, even if he's not frum, and you're buying it directly from the manufacturer, and the manufacturer is Jewish, so you don't have to tovel it. Now, the only caveat is we know that that might not necessarily be true. The example that I give, always used to like to give, is when before Debbie and I got married, so had to buy a kittel, right, for the chasana, for afterwards. I was having a challenge buying a kittel. I didn't like any of these things with all the ruffles and the lace and like just get a regular simple kittel. If you know what it's used for, I don't understand. Well, let's leave that aside. So I was going from one store to another, and I couldn't find a regular simple kittel. Couldn't find it. So finally, I found a store. Believe it or not far from the yeshiva. I mean, it was far from the yeshiva, but relatively close compared to Borough Park. And I bought a kittel there. I remember when I bought the kittel, so I opened it up, and to my chagrin, I saw a little tag on the inside, a little paper on the inside. It said, made in Taiwan. Now it'd be made in China. It doesn't make a difference. So that really brought home to me the idea that, you could buy something like a kettle, you could buy something like who knows what, and you think, but it's made who knows where. Now, obviously, Bechers are a very good example of this. You could buy a Becher, and who knows what, it has all these halog ideas in them, and who knows what. And if you look on the bottom, it could say made in Italy, made in India, made in who knows where. So again, it's not so simple anymore. Nothing simple. But again, assuming, let's say again, if you went to Mei Sharm, you went to Gula, I don't want to say you went to Borough Park, because that probably would not be true. But like again, you went to one of those places and you bought something actually from the manufacturer, was Jewish, and again, you ascertain that you're buying it directly from them, and it's something Jewish. It's something that you're buying from a Jew, and you're a Jew, I assume. So then you would not have to tovel it. Now, the problem is that, as I said before, most of the time that's not true, right? We go to Costco, you go to 99 cents, well, I don't know. And you have to assume that whoever you're buying from is either a non-Jew, or, because that's the situation in Golos, or it could be there was a middle person. I was about to say middleman, but that's not politically correct. A middle person who was non-Jewish, and they had it before they passed it on. So then you'd have to tovel it. Now, again, so it obviously gets a little complicated because, as I said before, nothing's simple anymore. So let's say I'm a Jew and I buy it from a Jew, but it could be there was a middleman who was not Jewish. Again, you have to ask these things. Maybe the person you're buying from would know. Again, it gets a little complicated. But if a goy owned it somewhere along the line, then you have to tovel it.
Again,
most of the time, yeah, you would tovel without a bracha. I don't want to say who, but one big posek, who I heard from a number of very reliable sources, never tovels anything with a bracha because of this issue. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, because the issue is, let's say you buy something from a company, it's a corporation. So am I buying it from a goy? I'm buying it from a corporation. What does that mean? I'm buying it from a corporation. I'm not buying it. Am I buying it from the CEO? I mean, what does that mean? I'm buying it from a corporation. So what does that mean? So I'm buying it from a non-Jew? I don't know if you could really... Again, this is a Ramosha discusses this. So again, for those reasons and others, so he totals everything without a bracha. As I say many times, if you do a mitzvah and you don't make a bracha, people ask this very often, right? You put on tefillin, you didn't write in the proper time, and there were kosher tefillin and so on and so forth, and you didn't make a bracha. Did you get the mitzvah tefillin? Sure. Hanukkah time, you lit the Hanukkah lift and you didn't make a bracha. Did you do the mitzvah? Yeah. The only thing is you lost the mitzvah of making a bracha on the mitzvah. Right? You matzah on Pesach, right? You didn't make a bracha. Well, the mitzvah, yeah, the kavana, you didn't Seder night or something, let's not get into that. But in all those cases, for those reasons, again, this is an unusual opinion that there is an Adam Gadol that totals everything without a bracha. But again, that's not conventional halachic wisdom. There's a, I don't want to, it's a bad way to say it. But there is such a concept because of this issue. Goy owned it, who owned it, what owned it, I don't know who owned it. You know, like, there is such an issue. Okay. Okay, I think we might stop here for tonight because there's a lot more to discuss. And the Mirza Shamblina, there next week we'll pick it up and discuss about a little more getting into the bracha and about Klei Suda and all those type of things. Yes, Mr. Cohen.
Ownership and not possession, like if one is behind.
No, it's a very good question. I was going to explain that a little later, but maybe see where you do get into this issue is by Pesach. Meaning that if you sell your chametz through a rabbi to a non-Jew, so that's your chametz. The question is, how about your non-Pesachdik vessels or utensils? So there's a difference of opinion. Some people sell those because they're worried about the chametz that's on there, so on and so forth. But the issue is that if Zuzu owns your, owns your chametz, including your dishes. So we all know here, especially in this shul, that the backyard is very busy before Pesach. But the truth of the matter is, based upon what we're saying now, the mikvah, the kelim mikvah in the back, should be very busy after Pesach. Because if a goy owned your vessels, when you get them back, assuming the goy sells it back, so then you should have to tovel it. This is not a simple issue, believe it or not. It's not a simple issue. Therefore, Allah Bate Din do not sell vessels. You might sell the chametz on the vessel, but they don't sell the vessel itself because of this issue. Now, there are leniencies. I think the Aruch HaShulchan says, differentiates between whether, as you just aptly, beautifully said, there's a difference between ownership and possession. That if a goy possessed it, so then you'd have to tovel. If he just owned it, you wouldn't. So that obviously might help out by Pesach or at post-Pesach. But again, that is an issue, whether it's ownership or possession. So again, when we talk about vessels and Pesach, that's where this issue really comes into clarity. But again, the best thing is to avoid the whole issue. So, okay, Emir Tzasham, I thank you for bringing clarifying that. Emir Tzasham, next week we'll get into this a little bit more.
What about restaurants? They are...